You are now entering the black holes of Netflix.
Hi, and welcome to our finale episode for season one.
Woohoo!
We have come so far, and we're so excited because today we are going to be talking about I'm in love with a church girl. So, Sarah, take it away.
Awesome. This is possibly one of the best worst films ever. Miles Montego is not the church-going type. In fact, he's a recently retired drug trafficker who enjoys drinking, partying, and buying the latest and greatest. But everything changes when he meets Vanessa, a devout Christian who teaches him how to seek God.
Bless their hearts.
Let's listen to a clip from the trailer.
Miles Montego, sitting with a real legend.
All right, we're gonna chop it up, celebrate a little bit, do what we do.
So, hey, did you fire up that package?
Well, just don't let money run your life, Miles.
He wears what we make in a year on his wrist.
This guy is the biggest drug trafficker in all of California, which is exactly why we want to nail this guy.
You need to come to church with me and find yourself a good woman there.
Oh, that's Vanessa. She goes to Bible study every week with my wife.
It's not ending. It's only the beginning.
What church do you attend?
Right now, I'm kind of in between churches.
We have been praying for a godly man, for Vanessa. Are you that godly man?
I used to be a drug dealer, Vanessa.
I think he met us hard. Fans all over the place, SWAT cars, guns.
I think you're as dirty as sin.
Would you like to tell me why there was a gun in your car?
What do you want from me? Fight the
pain, yeah.
God don't want somebody like me in his church, okay?
It's not all that!
God doesn't care about what you've done in your past. He just wants you to come as you are.
This is my last word!
Adrian Bynum, Jeff Jarrell Atkins, and Stephen Bowie. I'm in love with a church girl in theaters October 18th.
So our first element of what went completely wrong was actually the opening scene itself, specifically the music during the whole film, but the music during the first scene was absolutely terrible, at least for me. It did not make any sense to me whatsoever. I did not think I was in the right movie when I was watching it. Basically, what happened is the scene opened with shots of the ocean and fields with the most cheesiest fairy tale sounding music, but in such a bad way. Like, it wasn't great. Like, it was so generic. After that happened, there was harp in there and orchestra. So that was great. And then you're just getting used to this and adjusting to the music, and you're like, okay, maybe I can accept this. When you see the executive producer, God, in capital letters, man, was that telltale sign of what this experience is going to be like. And then also, you're listening to the music, seeing these weird aerial shots of landscape and then suburbs and then city, so that was interesting. But as soon as you see those aerial shots, you just hear Ja Rule's voice just going, you know, I know what people mean when I wish I knew then what I know now. Psh, ain't that the truth? And it was just so, such a stark contrast to the music and everything that it was created and the cheesiness that it added like a bad taste in my mouth. What did you feel like? Sorry, I had to explain all that.
No, it's okay. I think the music was definitely very cheesy and cliche for sure, but I think also just pairing it with the aerial shots that they did, like you said, was very confusing because the first scene is just the ocean. The second one is like a field or prairie, and that's an aerial shot that's typically used with, like, you know, movies like Oregon Trail type movies where people are heading out west. And yeah, so that's kind of what I was thinking.
Yeah, like even westerns, but like also like period romances is the first thing that came to my my mind, like Pride and Prejudice or like a really bad spinoff of Pride and Prejudice.
Yeah, but definitely not like a modern type movie, especially when it takes place in the city. The entire movie was in the city, so I feel like city aerial shots would be more appropriate. And I guess they eventually got to that.
But it was a really bad representation.
Took them a little while.
Because that first opening scene is important. You establish the world like we talked about last episode. And that world wasn't established very well.
Well, but I mean, it has God's stamp of approval, so...
He's in the opening title credits, so, you know, what can go wrong? But the music specifically, not in just that scene, but also in the rest of the movie, they just had music...
When it wasn't appropriate.
Wasn't appropriate at all. And it was really bad, cheesy romance music, like under a scene where they're where the two cops are talking about... like revenge, and you're like, what
yeah, they're trying to arrest him basically, and there's like this romantic music playing in the background that you would expect during a kissing scene, and it doesn't fit at all.
And then you hear Stephen Baldwin just make nonsense words come out of his mouth. It just the dialogue was so bad, but we'll get to that in a second. So just kidding, we're talking about it now.
It's time
to talk about. I think the worst element of the film, the dialogue and the writing specifically, but, you know, one and the same. Man, it was so bad. It was so unrealistic and so generic. Oh, my goodness. And your just general reaction that you felt after.
So actually... funny thing, those of you who have listened to our episodes before know that we have segments at the end, and one of them is the whiplash, which is the worst dialogue from the whole movie. I usually have trouble coming up with a whiplash, but for this movie, it finished, and my first thought was, can I put the whole movie as the whiplash? Like, really, just a lot of... just that it was cliche and generic, but a lot of it just didn't make any sense either. Madison was talking kind of about Stephen Baldwin's character and how he was kind of just... talking nonsense, and it's true. There were so many scenes where I just was sitting there like, wait a second, are they actually speaking English?
It's,
or are
like,
they just...
Yeah, it's like if a computer-generated dialogue script, you just plugged in a scene description, and then it popped out. So, like, two FBI agents talking, and it was, like, popping out random words and like phrases that are cop phrases, and I was just... It was so confusing.
Yeah.
For me specifically... It was so unrealistic because there really was no subtlety in any of their dialogue. Specifically, there were quite a few scenes where they would explain the joke or explain what the person was thinking or saying through the dialogue, when all that was necessary was really like a mm-hmm or like an action or body language. So there was a scene specifically with the mother character, and she goes to Ja Rule's character and goes, I never see you at church anymore. And, she doesn't say that. She said, will you come to church with me? And he goes, oh, maybe. And then instead of being like a mm-hmm kind of thing, where she could have just like shrugged it off and made like a gesture to show that like she can never get him to church, she literally says, I can never get you to church. It's always so hard to get you to church. And it like won't stop for 2 minutes. And you're like, that was so unnecessary. Like, really?
Killing the joke.
Oh, my gosh. It was so bad. And there was another one where the mom specifically, I think there was a lot with the mother character, where he goes, oh, maybe I'll holler at my dad later. And then she goes, what, Miles, what is holler? What is holler? And, like, keeps repeating it. And you're just like, she's like, holler at what? I'm confused. And you're just like, no, that was so poorly executed. But that's how I felt like it was super unrealistic. And not to mention there was a ton of forced laughter in many scenes.
Yeah.
Uncomfortable forced laughter. Like the interrogation, not interrogation scene, but they're doing a briefing.
Uh-huh.
And he's standing in front of the screen and he tries to make a joke. He's like, I want to let him marry my daughter. And
everyone just in the briefing just kind of.
Literally like that. It wasn't a boisterous.
It's like the pity laugh. Oh, this is my boss. I should laugh.
It was so generic. I think they honestly just took a sound clip. It didn't even sound real. But so that's that. But what did you think, Sarah, that made it so generic? You were talking about that a little bit.
Yeah. So again, there were just a lot of scenes, or not a lot of scenes, sorry. There was a lot of dialogue, a lot of lines that just did not work. I mean, I guess if they were trying to be cheesy, great job, but it just, it didn't seem to fit with, I think, what the film was trying to do. There's one part, again, with Stephen Baldwin's character where they're kind of in a meeting with their boss and he said, are we going to put a price tag on justice? And I feel like it was supposed to be serious. Maybe not. I don't know.
But it was really just slapped in there. Like, it just felt like, oh, we're going to add this line to give it some depth. But it was not, no depth at all. It seriously, the dialogue in this film was as if Mad Libs, but for 90s rappers. Like, you could only use lingo for 90s rappers or like specific to each of these generic stereotyped characters. Specifically with the use of dog and homie in the friend scenes where he was hanging out with his friends at the club. Their language was so stereotyped in such a bad way and so generic. Honestly,
no way that people would actually talk like that, especially if they're drug traffickers.
No, and the sad thing, it was made in 2013.
Yeah.
That is not that long ago.
Yeah.
Like, there really is no excuse for this dialogue. It's so bad. And, last but not least, oh my gosh, the amount of times that they said babe and baby to each other instead of using their names, it was like every other sentence. They just throw in babe or baby. Why are you mad at me, baby? And then, oh, babe, like, what could I do this? Babe, you know, that. And it drove me nuts. I literally at one point yelled at the screen, like, they have names. Just call her Vanessa or just call him Miles. Like, I can't handle it anymore.
Yeah, really, though.
So our last element was the plot itself. I got the vibe from watching it that it was just very predictable and yet really unrealistic, especially with its progression of some of the storylines. Like, things went way too fast or were really unrealistic, but somehow so predictable. Like, we just knew it was going to happen. What were your thoughts?
Absolutely. It was one of those things where, it didn't feel like real people. I was thinking no one would actually act this way. Any girl who encountered this guy after a few days would run the other direction if she was smart. And I feel like any guy who encountered this girl, I don't care how hot she is. I mean, are you really going to change everything about your life just for a girl that you just met? I don't know. Maybe you will. And I guess that's a popular trope in these kinds of movies.
But. Yeah, I guess. But at the same time, they said, I love you. On, what was it, day 3 or day 2?
Yeah, something like that.
It was insane. And
they were supposedly dating before that point, too, because he kept saying, this is my girl, and she was okay with it, I guess.
It was super strange. I was like, didn't they DTR? Like, didn't they have a determine the relationship talk? Like, what? Very confusing. Apparently not. Apparently that doesn't exist in this world. It's fine. But honestly, one of the most unrealistic things I thought was there's this scene where he pulls out a gun out of his glove compartment of his car while his friends are getting in a fight with somebody else in front of them. And he pulls out the gun to defuse the situation by screaming at the guy that they were fighting with, saying, get out, like, leave. And then his friend was yelling at him, like, shoot him, shoot him, shoot him. And then afterwards, she's a mess, but he's like, oh, I did it to defuse the situation and to protect them, but I'm not a drug trafficker and it's fine. And then she's like really upset. She seems traumatized. Like, she did a pretty good job acting that, because I'd be pretty like traumatized if that happened. Oh, yeah,
anyone would.
Or at least shocked. And then literally the next scene, they're celebrating his birthday as if nothing had happened. And man, was I just blown. I was like, are we serious? We're not going to even have like a little bit of progression or discussion on why this happened more or repercussions, consequences for his actions, maybe that she's like more distant from him or something. No, just straight to the birthday and all is well. Super weird.
She just seemed very naive to me the entire movie. Oh, man. Like, he even admits to her on like the second or third day that he was a drug trafficker. And she's like, you know, I don't care because with God, everyone can change. And again, that's great and all. Sure, with God, everyone can change, whatever. However, there's a difference between, like, accepting people for who they are and, like, being willing to date someone who might actually be a terrible person. And,
But also, she just met him.
Yeah.
He is a stranger.
He has a gun in his car.
He's a gun in his car, but he's also a stranger.
Yeah.
Like, it's fine, especially to accept people who they are, like, later down the road as your relationship develops, or at least as you get to know them better in a safe public setting. But he was legit a stranger and she trusted him so quickly. Very unrealistic. Also, with the predictability aspect, I just felt like every trope from like a faith or gospel movie was used. It was just an amalgamation of all of those tropes. Like, oh, let's list some. There was the mother dying.
Yep.
Classic. One of the parents has to die or a relative every time. Also, there was the surviving a disaster. In this case, for us, it was a coma that she survived.
Yeah.
And she miraculously came out because of faith, which, not mean to bash, like, that's totally cool. But it was just such
a trope.
It's
definitely a cliche. Yeah.
Yeah, such a trope. Like, it was fine if they had one in here, maybe two. But they had, like, all of them. Like, what was, like, the other one?
There's a moment, too, where she's in her coma, and there's kind of that yelling at God scene where Miles has his confrontation with God, and
oh my gosh,
it was actually kind of funny, and I guess on the border of sacrilegious, he goes out, and there's this huge, giant stained glass, like, image of Christ, and he goes out, and he's like, oh, good, I'm glad you're here, and then he proceeds to yell at Christ but and was, talk about how terrible everything
it
is.
It was so funny, because he's like, he literally walks up, and he's like, oh, I'm glad to see you made it. And you're like,
well, what? Of course he's here.
Like, it is such bad writing. Oh my gosh. Yeah. So it was just a lot of tropes.
Okay. And I just have to add in too, the ending scene. Oh my goodness. Everyone was just, it's one of those perfect happy endings, right? But the perfect happy ending is that all of his friends end up in jail and somehow he's not in jail because I guess he repented and whatnot. So he and Vanessa get married and they're having a baby and he's writing a letter to his friends and it shows his friend in the cell sitting and laughing as he's reading the letter like he's all happy. And then it shows them all playing basketball. And I'm thinking, wait a second. This doesn't feel right. If I was in jail, I would not be happy, especially if my friend, who was also in drug trafficking, was not in jail. Yeah. I'm just saying. I feel like people aren't that chummy when you're doing illegal things. I don't know. That's just me. But
yeah, it was really strange that they were laughing about that. And it was also really strange that they were okay with it and it was like no big deal and he was like, oh, I'm gonna see you when you get out and it's all gonna be good.
You guys stay out of trouble now.
And it was just hilarious because they zoom in on him and he's writing this little letter on his couch and it's like, dear diary almost. And you're just like, what? This is so unrealistic. It was just so funny. Okay, so we talked about earlier how there literally were so many whiplash moments. Because the dialogue was so bad. What took the cake for you?
So there's this one scene where they're meeting each other, Vanessa and Miles. He's at a party, and as they're introduced, they shake hands, and he kind of holds on to her hand for a bit, right? Because the cliche, like, we're meeting eyes. And she says, let me have my hand back, or I'm going to have to call 911. And I'm thinking, wait... Haha, what?
It's a really awkward joke just because she's talking about calling 911 on him for what? Assault? But he's
is her hand hurting? Is, I don't know.
So it was like a really a joke in bad taste almost.
Yeah.
And everyone kind of had a nervous laugh after, and you were just like, that was supposed to be a charming meet cute, but it was not at all.
And there were several lines that kind of had that vibe to them. So
totally. My favorite was, the opening credits with the executive producer, God, that just killed me. I thought it was so hilarious that it was just so dumb. But also there were a couple other ones that we've talked about already, like the use of baby and babe. But but the one that really topped it off for me was the... can you put a price tag on justice? I died. So those were mine. Okay, so for our shooting star segment, I don't know about you, but this was hard for me.
Yeah, I didn't see a lot of redemption in this film or moments where I thought, you know, maybe this could be good. It was mostly like, eh.
Yeah, but totally. It was just, the writing was so bad, it was almost distracting. And the music in combination with it.
Yeah.
And yeah, where it wasn't necessary, it was deadly combo. But seriously, it feels like they could have done a better job with the writing, obviously. For me, I thought the production value was actually quite good. It was made in 2013, and the cameras, like the camera footage and everything in the editing, it looked nice. It didn't look bad. Like, yes, the set and the costuming weren't super up to date, but it wasn't horrible. Like,
yeah.
It worked well. Everything looked nice. Just, it was so off-putting in contrast with the music and with the dialogue, which was unfortunate. But that was a really good part of it for me in general, was that they had really, really nice footage.
Yeah. And I also felt like, although the plot and the writing and everything were very cliche, the message was cute. I mean, it's a nice idea to think, yeah, God does help you overcome all things. And especially if you're a faithful person, I think that's a really positive, uplifting message.
Yeah, I definitely was not necessarily uplifted at the end, but I was like, oh, that was really sweet. And it was really cute. Even at the end credits, they had pictures of the congregation it was based off of and some like dedications to people. And I was like, okay, that's sweet. Like, it was made in memory. It's like a home movie.
Yeah, yeah.
I was just like, aw, like, that's cute. So that I think was like the only redeeming quality.
Yeah, I would agree.
So with the Shouting Donkey, this was hard because there were just so many moments that were really bad. For me, at least, that opening scene really like hit me and made me feel like, oh, this is what we're going to be watching. But there is a separate scene a little bit later in the film, but still early on, that really introduced to us how these characters are going to interact. And it was that lingering handshake scene that you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, so I already mentioned this a little bit, but again, as they're shaking hands, they hold on for a little bit, and Miles kind of rubs her hand with his thumb, and there's, like, that cliche, like, I want to call it almost sparkly music in the background, like, oh, this is a happy romantic moment, and it was just so overdone. I'm just sitting there dying because of
so awkward, so awkward.
Yeah.
That was the worst part. It's fine if it's, like, super cheesy and it's, like, supposed to be meet cute. But he lingered for too long. Then she makes that weird comment about 911. It literally looks like everyone's uncomfortable, even actors. Yeah. They're trying to act like it's okay, but it's not. And everyone just does a weird laugh, and he keeps staring at her. And you're just like, what?
Yeah. It was weird.
It's like, oh, this is the chemistry. This is the acting that we're going to have to sit through for the next hour and a half. Great. Okay, so with everything that we've talked about, how did you feel? Did you feel like it was a supernova, black hole? Where was it on the scale for you?
So for me, I want to say it's a supernova, not in the sense that it's like a good film. It was definitely, for me, a very bad film. However, it's one of those films that I definitely think you can sit down and watch with friends and say, wow, this is really bad. Like, just sit and laugh at it and, I guess, appreciate the bad qualities that it has to offer. I don't know.
It is definitely, with all the really bad dialogue, that makes a really quotable movie, for sure.
Oh, yeah.
So I think that was made it more of a supernova for me. I don't think it was quite at the supernova end, maybe mainly because I just watched it by myself. So instead of having fun commentary and banter, like, with friends, like, about how dumb it was, I was just sitting there and I was like, why am I watching this? It's so dumb. But I loved it by the end because it was just so ridiculous. But I'd highly recommend watching it with friends.
Definitely
get some
watch
popcorn and maybe just count how many times they say dog or homie or baby or babe, because you will be shocked. It is hilarious. Okay, since this is our finale and our last episode of the season, we kind of want to talk about our favorite worst films. What's one of your favorite worst films?
So I feel like I'm one of those people that enjoys watching, like, Hallmark Christmas movies for the same reason that we've been talking about, just to sit and kind of laugh at the terrible writing and quality and all of these things. And so there was a recent movie that I actually watched with my sister. It's called The Princess Switch. You might have heard of it. It's a pretty recent movie that I think Netflix put out this last December. And it stars Vanessa Hudgens. And it's one of those, super cliche, like, oh, one girl's a commoner and the other girl's a princess. They switch places, end up falling in love with people, whatnot.
Yeah.
And it's one of those where I think, yeah, it's enjoyable because it has that cute little heartwarming thing, mm-hmm. even if it's terrible quality. And it's also kind of a supernova in the sense that you can sit and make fun of it, but
that's fair.
Definitely cheesy, definitely cliche. So, and I mean, I guess it's just important to know what you're getting into when you're watching some of these films.
Honestly, for me, I have such a hard time with Hallmark. I cannot do it. I like films that challenge me, but not to the point where I want to gouge my eyes out or my ears out so I don't have to listen to bad dialogue and bad writing. Because man, Hallmark, I get furious. You can ask my family. Like, I do not like Hallmark. But for me, my favorite worst film to watch, it's this 80s film called Willow. And, oh my gosh, I just die every time I think about it. I just think of watching it with my family and how ridiculous it was. It was this fantasy film that just had everything in it. It had witches. It had romance. It had towns, people who were dwarves. But it's so funny. And there's just this one scene where the witch just always... where the witch just says his name and she goes, Willow, and I just die. I think it's the funniest thing. So every time I just hear about Willow, I'm just like, Willow.
That actually sounds pretty good. I might have to watch that.
It's pretty great. If we do season two, we're definitely watching that one. So we wanted to give a quick shout out to some other podcasts that we just love so much. I wanted to shout out to Film Spotting. I'm a huge fan. And man, that March Madness is brutal. They do a bracket of the best films of a category. So this year they did the 2000s. And that was so hard. At one point I had to choose between The Fellowship of the Ring and Dark Knight. And that was a struggle because I love both of those films.
Yeah. We're definitely big fans of Film Spotting. We also want to shout out to How Did This Get Made? Both of those podcasts just really helped us kind of decide our content, our formatting, figure out our audience, and they really just kind of helped us get on our way to becoming podcasters. So thank you so much to both of these podcasts for being our inspiration. We love you.
So we would love to hear about what your favorite worst films are. So if you follow us on Twitter, at @BadNetFilms, go follow us and tweet at us with your own suggestions of films that we should review or your favorite worst films or anything that you thought was hilarious or wanted to comment on from the show. We would love to hear your feedback. Goodbye. This is end of season one.
Thanks so much for your support, guys.
It's been great.